Okay, before we get into it, an announcement, just a reminder, we're going to have the midterm next week. We're going to hand that out Monday after class. Handouts, I'll likely just post that online. It'll be password protected. I'll give you the password at the end of class. Then you'll have until Friday to complete that. Class on Monday, we'll have time. We'll lecture as normal, but if there are any questions, we'll delay the lecture and talk about anything you guys want to hear before the midterm starts. Like I said, still willing to answer conceptual theory-based questions during the midterm. Okay. As a reminder, this is no collaboration, no discussion with your peers allowed. No, I encourage that on all the homework, on the exams, your work only, your approach to the problem only, your understanding only. Includes other students in the class, other students not in the class, other people online, no resources other than your notes, book, course website, anything posted on the course website. Any questions? No, as a rule. University of Colorado's website is the book. So all those resources are going to be in the book. Yeah. No, not during the week of the exam. Any other questions? Those are fine. I don't think there's anything built in there that is going to give you additional power electronics theory. So those tools are fine to use. Whatever you prefer. You're welcome to use those things. If your results are based on simulation, you won't receive credit. If I ask you to solve something and you give me an LT spice circuit and show me what it gave you, you'll get zero credit. You're welcome to use those as much as you like, as long as it's yours. You're going online and taking somebody's boost converter circuit and simulating that, and I find out that'll be a problem. But if you want to do what you want in LT spice or Simulink, great.
Do you want to see that? Like if I said, oh, this converter, I simulated LT spice and confirm my hand analysis.
In most cases, no, I won't give any credit for it. Where I would maybe consider giving you some credit is if you're really stuck on something and you can show me, look, I ran these simulations, I know I'm wrong, but I can't figure out how to do it. I'd maybe consider giving you some extra partial credit and, well, you got stuck, but you at least recognized it and proved out how you're wrong, but couldn't figure out how to do it. But you say, these are my hand calculations and here's a simulation of it. The hand calculations are right, you get full credit. If they're wrong, just plugging it in somewhere isn't going to give you any extra credit. So if you're inferring something based on those results and you want to put that in there, that I could reward that with some credit. But for the most part, I wouldn't. And in fact, I'll walk that back. I will likely not reward that with extra credit. And I don't want to, the reason I walk that back is I don't want other people to feel like, oh, well, I better go simulate stuff just to be sure. Right? So most likely, no, I don't want to see it. But you're welcome to use it. Okay. Other questions? Okay. Questions related to the course? Anything on the homework?
Yeah, for the formal converters, do you consider magnetizing current in the equation?
So, in buck-derived converters, where the magnetizing inductance is not part of circuit operation, it's just something that you have to worry about for saturation reasons, you still have to consider it. You still have to make sure, for example, in the forward converter, you get this important restriction on the duty cycle. This thing can only operate in this range of duty cycle that is determined by the turns ratio. But after that, it's not an energy storage element. The current in it should be small relative to everything else. So from that point on, you can neglect it. It's not critical to the circuit operation. Okay. Not true in the flyback. The flyback LM is your energy storage inductor. And the rest of the isolated converters that we've gone over in class, it's just some parasitic thing. You need to analyze it far enough to make sure it's not going to saturate, but then other than that, it shouldn't really affect converter operation. Beyond the scope of this course, there's interesting things you can do with it. So you can intentionally make that current a little bit larger to help out with switching losses in certain ways. And that may be something you do in some more advanced designs. As far as the base operation of the forward or the full bridge converter, LM doesn't affect how it operates as long as you don't saturate it. Does that answer your question? Anything else? Move on with what we were doing. So we were getting into chapter 7 last class, talking about closed loop operation of converter and moving away from our analysis in steady state. So we kind of looked at a high level where we're trying to get. We'd like to take this converter now and be able to figure out what the behavior is going to be as things are changing that are moving me out of steady state. I might be operating in steady state at a given load, given input voltage. And then something happens. The input voltage goes up or down. The load changes. My inductor gradually degrades over time. How is my circuit going to respond to that? And furthermore, how do I design a controller to make sure that it responds well, make sure that it remains stable, can regulate with zero error, the output voltage to a reference or anything else that I'm trying to regulate, and it can, in response to some disturbance, converge back to my intended output voltage with minimal overshoot, minimal ringing, and do so very quickly. Okay, that's where we're trying to get. Looked at what makes this difficult. What makes this difficult is this type of analysis of systems, how they respond to disturbances at different frequencies is something we'd like to do in the theory that you've developed over the course of your career here. In the frequency domain using Boss transform and using transfer functions of different blocks. If I have those, I can know how a given system responds to different inputs. Okay? And I can design my closed loop control. Problem is that these transfer function things, as we know them, are defined for linear time invariant systems. And a switching converter fundamentally is not linear nor time invariant. That's because I have all of this internal switching stuff going on. You can kind of imagine right off the bat that if this thing's switching, if I change the duty cycle at certain times, I'm going to get different behavior. Change the duty cycle in this period during D or during D prime, I'm going to get a different response. So it is time varying. It's also nonlinear. We'll look at mathematically where that comes from today. Another way to look at it, when I look at a spectrum at the output of the converter, if I start changing the duty cycle at a given frequency, omega m, what I'm going to see at my output of this transfer function is a whole lot of frequencies. And in any linear time invariant system, the output only has the frequencies that showed up at the input. So having all these additional frequencies means I'm somehow not LTI. So if we want to model this with a transfer function, we're going to have to get rid of all this frequency content, and we're going to do that by two things, averaging and then linearizing. So there's two components to that. One is, why are we doing it? And we're doing it because we need to, because otherwise we have to analyze some nonlinear time-varying system, which is very difficult, not going to be worth the effort. And then the question is this a good thing to do? Are we still going to get good behavior? Well, what we're going to be neglecting for the most part is switching ripple, which we said before in these critical things like the output voltage that we're trying to regulate, we better design that ripple to be small. So it's probably okay to neglect it. It should be much smaller than any signal that we're talking about. Kind of just refresh at the end of class last time, we looked at an example of our volt-second balance on the inductor and the boost converter, but did it a bit more perhaps formally than we have been for the last few classes, rather than just jumping through and writing the answer as you're capable of now. I'm going to look back at where does this come from. What we did is we looked at one period of operation, making a small ripple approximation on some of our time-varying signals. We can say that if I'm in steady state, the current at the beginning of the interval and at the end of the interval have to be the same. With a small ripple approximation, I've got this linear ramping up, linear ramping down of current. So however much I ramp up has to be how much I ramp down if I'm in steady state. Setting those things equal to one another, we get an equation for volt-second balance. Okay. So when I set these two currents equal to one another, this is fundamentally what my change in current is over the period, the difference between the current at the start and the current at the end. Setting that equal to zero means my change in current is zero, I'm in steady state. As we move into transient operation where we're no longer in steady state, the difference is going to be this thing doesn't have to be zero. This thing is just how much my current changed. Okay. So we're going to look at this same thing. Again, the inductor behavior in the boost converter as an example, but we're going to be now in the middle of some transient. Okay. So again, I'm going to plot the inductor current, I sub L versus time. Starts at some value, I sub L of zero. And I'm going to have a DTS interval and then a D prime interval. I'm going to intentionally sketch them radically different. And what's going to happen in this first interval, the switch is in position one. I'm going to ramp up the rate of VG of T over L. Second interval, same thing as before. I'm going to ramp down the slope of VG of T minus V of T over L to a final value, IL of TS. Okay. So the fundamental behaviors are the same. The difference now is, as I've sketched it, I'm in the middle of some non-steady state operation. This is either the converter is just starting up, or I guess as I've drawn it, it looks kind of like a load release. The load power has dropped, so the inductor current is now having to drop down to the new load value. Okay. So we're going to have this same relationship where I can say that the inductor current at the end of the period is equal to the inductor current at the beginning of the period, plus however much I went up in this interval should be VG over L times my duty cycle times TS, so slope times time, plus however much I come down in my second interval, which is going to look like VG of T minus V of T over L times D prime TS. Okay, at this point in our previous derivation, we said from here I can get rid of all these time varying things by making a small ripple approximation. Again, assume the input voltage is more or less DC, that's subject to the system that's powering this. And assume my output voltage is more or less DC in steady state. That means I've designed a big enough capacitor to limit the ripple on the output. Okay. We're in transient operation, small ripple approximation is not going to make sense, right? I can't approximate away everything that is not DC because I'm trying to figure out how is this thing moving? How is this thing responding? What does that transient look like? And that transient is fundamentally a potentially multi-frequency but AC response. Okay. So at this point, we're going to do a relaxed version of it. So instead of small ripple approximation, going to do a more general approach, which is going to be averaging. Over one switching period. Okay. So averaging over one switching period, what it's going to do is it's going to remove ripple components that are at the switching frequency and above, so the actual switching ripple, but it's going to leave any low frequency, any response to modulation, any response to changes in load, any actual transients of the converter. Okay. So what's that going to look like? Recall that angle brackets are how we denote averaging. So what I'm going to have, I'm going to rearrange this equation again, and I'm going to put my L over TS and multiply this right side by L over TS, cancel out, and shift the IL0 over to the left. Have IL of TS minus IL of 0. These two things are instantaneous values. That's going to look like dVg plus d prime Vg minus V. And those things I'm going to now average. I'm going to have d times the average value Vg of t over one switching period. These angle brackets denote that I'm doing this averaging function over one period, TF, plus D prime times average Vg of t over TF minus average V of t over TF. Okay. I am going to pretty quickly move back to my shorthand for this. Where I'm going to say, let me get a different color. Average of x of t over ts is going to become this, just so I don't have to keep writing that everything's a function of t and I'm averaging over ts. Do it once. Okay. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to rearrange. I'm going to combine the Vg term. I'll still have a d plus d prime. So this is still going to become, average Vg minus d prime average of V. And that's equal to this thing on the left, L over TS times IL of TS minus IL of zero, which as we discussed at the end of class last time, what is this? This is over the entire period, the change in inductor current divided by the time difference between those points. So this is an LdIdt type expression, and it's just modeling the net behavior over that entire period. So this is equal to, well, instantaneously, V is equal to LdIdt. If I model over the entire period what happens, then that's equal to the average voltage applied that entire time. Okay, a lot of maybe formality to get back to a point very similar to what we had before, right? So I set this to zero, replace these with DC values, I get zero is equal to Vg minus D prime V, my normal equation. The difference here is that in transient operation, these are not DC, they're average values. And this thing is not zero. This is the average voltage applied to the inductor. But that's not going to be zero because the inductor current is or could potentially be changing. We have to keep this in there, LdIdt, okay? So can also express this then, since I am moving into the averaging domain, average VL is going to be equal to L the average inductor current, VT, equal to VG minus D prime V. And we're going to do one more thing here in anticipation of what's to come. So strictly speaking here, I'm only modeling a single period. As we move on and we want to model a transient in this converter, that's going to take place over multiple periods. We're going to be interested in dynamics well below the switching frequency. So then, if I have a control system, additionally, this is potentially time varying. So my D prime, my duty cycle, is going to change over time as the control system responds to some disturbance. Okay. So conceptually, what is this modeling? So this average is trying to get rid of the switching ripple component that has all these additional harmonics. And we've now, by doing this averaging, developed an equation which models the average change in inductor current. On this plot, what'd that look like? Well, if I pick a point kind of in the middle of both of these linear intervals, draw a line through it, this would be more or less what average IL looks like. I've gotten rid of all of that ripple, and now I just have the average value, which is shifting over time. No longer just capital IL, some DC component, but it's still average. Still gets rid of any sort of dynamic faster than the switching frequency. Okay. So, another slide from the book talking about the same thing. This is in the buck boost converter. Just to reiterate these equations. The line showing that there is some difference between IL of 0 and IL of TS. By and large, the same equations apply, but now average voltage applied to the inductor is not zero, it's some quantity that we're going to need to model to figure out how the inductor current is changing. Okay. So discussion of this, so when we average over now multiple periods, I'm going to have some inductor current waveform that looked like this. This is my IL of T. And by averaging, what I'm going to get is something that keeps all of the dynamics slower than the switching frequency. Well, all that are much slower than the switching frequency, but gets rid of anything at the switching frequency and above, which is where the ripple exists. Ripple begins at the switching frequency and has harmonics out to infinity if it's triangular or trapezoidal, any of these ripple behaviors that we've looked at. Okay. So far, averaging, unlike small ripple approximation, will yield a correct, is that color okay? Can you guys see that? Okay. The prediction. Of average behaviors. Okay. So this is, by averaging, we're not necessarily making an approximation. The approximation may be in how you interpret this. Assume that the average is all you need to care about, that ripple still exists. But unlike small ripple approximation, where we're actually saying something that fundamentally isn't true. Let's say this voltage is DC and analyze based on that. Here, averaging still is mathematically true. If I want to model the average current change, I can use the average voltage change. Okay. We haven't made a big approximation yet. The approximation is going to come, one, later when we linearize, and then two, in how we apply this. We assume that these are the only things we need to worry about. Well, maybe ripple matters. So the limitation of this using averaging, one, it's going to be a good approximation only if the ripple is much less than the average value on whatever signal we're looking at. In this case, only if the inductor current ripple is much smaller than its one period average. Okay. Two, this is only going to be valid for frequencies, I mentioned before, much less than the switching frequency. If we start the predict dynamics at the switching frequency, well, what's the response if I put a sinusoid on the duty cycle at the switching frequency? The converter would do nothing, because that sinusoid would get sampled at the same point every period. The duty cycle would be the same every period. I get no change in the output. As I get close to the switching frequency, I can no longer do this, but that makes sense. I've averaged away all these behaviors up in those frequencies and neglecting them entirely. Okay. And then what we'll address next is circuit may and is almost certainly nonlinear. Nonlinear. So even though we've gotten rid of some of this high frequency content, we're still not going to be able to apply a transfer function to it. If I come back, for example, here and look at this equation at the bottom, when I start looking at multiple periods, this term right here, oh, I did my shorthand and maybe I should have held off longer. But this average output voltage is still time varying. It changes period to period as I'm in my transient, my output voltage is moving. My duty cycle is also time varying. I've got some controller trying to respond to that. Right here, I have the multiplication of two time varying terms, which is going to be nonlinear. I'm going to have to figure out how to work with that. Okay. So now I'm going to have to take these equations and I'm going to have to linearize them if I want to get into an LTI system that I can model with a transfer function. Sounds like people are getting a lot of experience with linear systems and nonlinearities of them in 431 currently. So for those of you who aren't having the pleasure of working on the 431 labs, let's do a quick review of what we mean when we say to linearize a system. And we'll use an example that kind of looks like this 431 stuff, because that's where you've seen it before most likely. Okay, so just to formalize this, LDILDT was average value VG minus D prime of T average value V, this equation that we came up with for the boost inductor current. This thing right here is a nonlinear portion of this behavior. Perhaps going a bit further, I mean, this is going to be our new equation describing circuit operation. It's going to look like the KVL as before. Before in our DC model, I could take this and I could sketch an equivalent circuit for this. The problem is that in that equivalent circuit, I'm going to have some source where I have to say, take the duty cycle, which is some input, and multiply it by the output, which is some signal. And that's something we can't work with. That's nonlinear that we can't work with in circuit. Okay. We can do dependent sources where there's a constant value times some signal. That's okay. That's still linear. But multiplying two signals together, nonlinear. Okay. Because this is the product of two time varying signals. say, so what do we want to do? We work with nonlinear circuits and systems all the time. The way we do that is we linearize them. So by way of my brief review, what I'm going to look at is a circuit that looks like this, where this is not a power circuit. This is a signal amplifier. Bias, and I'm using this common source amplifier to have some AC signal at the input, amplify it up to a bigger signal at the output. Right. So when I look at this thing, this is a heavily nonlinear system due to the behavior of this MOSFET. If I looked at the input-output relationship on a plot, it would look something like Vin's real low, MOSFET's fully off. Real high, the MOSFET's fully on. In the middle, I get some kind of sigmoid-looking thing, depending on the exact behaviors of the circuit. And if I want this common source amplifier to behave like a common source amplifier, the way I'm going to operate it is I'm going to put a DC operating point or a bias point right here. So the DC circuit is sitting with some capital VI VIN, some capital VO VOUT. And then if I apply some small AC signal around that, sketch my input, I apply this kind of sinusoid, it's going to be multiplied through by this input to output relationship. And what I'm going to get out of the thing is going to be some potentially significantly taller signal. Right? So as I move the input left and right, I'm actually going to be moving on this axis, which is going to amplify up my signal. Okay. In a limited range around this DC operating point, the behavior of this is going to be well approximated by this line. This is my linearized relationship. Okay, so this is the signal I'm putting it in. I only really care about the behavior of the circuit in this range, some small delta around my DC operating point. I don't have to carry around the more complex equations describing this that would tell me, okay, what happens as I turn the transistor fully on and move into triode mode, or what happens as I go to cutoff, because I'm not going into those modes. I only care about what's the behavior in close proximity of my DC operating point. Okay, so that is our small signal analysis, which says we look at some bias point and what's the circuit response in a very small region around that. Okay, generally we can linearize any system as long as we're not directly on a discontinuity in the system behavior. And depending on how close to linear the system is, that small signal approximation may only be valid for millivolts around my DC operating point, or maybe pretty good for 100 volts around it. But always, if I go close enough on any type of plot where I'm not at a discontinuity, it's going to look linear if I zoom in enough. Okay. So this is our small signal linearization. Says that, for example, if I define this plot here, my original is V out equal to some F of V in, and that F will give me the sigmoid type curve, then my linearization to tell me that Vout is approximately my DC operating point. Now, let's see. This thing. So at my DC operating point, what is the output voltage? That'd just be this function with the DC operating voltage applied. That would give me capital V out plus my signal component, V in times the partial derivative of F with respect to V in evaluated at DC. Okay. So I take the derivative of this function with respect to Vn, which will give me this slope, and then multiply that by any variation. That's my linear component. Okay. So notation that we're going to use, I'll put a hat on Vn. I use these hats to denote small signal terms. So, like I said, for any system, this sort of approximation is going to be valid if I look close enough and am small enough signal. So the limitation on this is going to be that my AC component, this small signal perturbation on my input, has to be much smaller than the DC value. As I'm linearizing, that's only valid in a short region here. If I expand this out and start to have an input that sees these sort of nonlinearities of saturation at the end of this amplifier, then this approximation, this red line, is no longer going to be good. It's only valid in the narrow window around that operating point. Okay. Questions on that? That's familiar to everybody? Various directions of head shaking. Okay. Diagonal. Okay. So this is just our general review of linearization. Hopefully this is something that is at least rapidly coming back to you, if not already very clear. Okay. So now what I want to do is then apply these same concepts to what I have, my nonlinear equation. Okay. I want to linearize them, get them to some kind of expression that looks like this, where I have a DC terms plus some small variation multiplied by partial of the function with respect to that variable. There are two ways you can approach this. We'll do both in the next couple of slides. We're going to apply them to this equation here, back to our boost converter equation. We're going to figure out how to linearize this equation. Okay. The first is perturb and linearize. Basically, I take my nonlinear equation, replace all the terms with DC plus small signal, and then multiply everything out and get rid of any terms that are higher order than first order. Okay. The second is going to be doing a Taylor series expansion to first order. Look at this. This looks like the beginning of a Taylor series. If I wanted a full Taylor series expansion of this function, I have to have plus the second partial terms plus the third partial, keep going. We can do that, but just stop after our first partial. So we have only our first order terms. Okay. So we're going to now linearize this top equation. I'm going to start with the perturb and linearize approach. Copy my equation here. L times average IL. Derivative of that with respect to time. Is equal to average input voltage minus D prime of T times average output voltage. Okay, so the approach for perturb and linearize is one. I'm going to replace all of my time-varying signals, which have now been averaged. Anything that looks like average of x is going to go to a DC plus a small signal term. So this will be my DC op point. This will be my AC small signal. Okay. And in this, as discussed before, for this linearization to work, I need, in all cases, my small signal perturbation to be much smaller than my DC operating point. Okay, so everything with a hat is tiny. Okay. Then after that, what I'm going to do is replace those in, multiply out, simplify my equations, and then I'm going to eliminate all second order or higher terms, because those are nonlinear. Okay, what does that look like? I'll take this equation, I'm gonna plug in L, and then this IL average becomes DC plus small signal equal to my VGE comes DC plus small signal. My D prime is also going to become small signal. In this equation specifically, I could do capital D prime plus D prime hat. More generally, you're going to have expressions in D and expressions in D prime, and those two are not independent, right? D prime is always 1 minus D. So it's going to be easier to do D as your variable. So instead, I'm going to write 1 minus D, which now becomes D plus D prime. I don't have to draw another parenthesis. D plus D hat. With 1 minus quantity D plus D hat, the one distributes on both. And that's going to multiply my V plus V hat. Okay. That's step one, just replace anything that could be time varying with DC plus small signal. Now I'm going to multiply this out. Over here, I'll get L D by DT. Go ahead and multiply that one out. So DIL hat DT is equal to VG plus VG with a hat minus V hat plus DV plus DV hat plus D hat V plus D hat, V hat. Did I miss any? Second end. Okay. So now I've got this full expression. What I can do is, I've done number one, I can do number two now, which is eliminate this term here. This is my second order term. It's the product of two hat type signals. Based on this assumption, if all of my AC perturbations are much smaller than my DC, then all of my AC terms are much smaller than my DC terms. I could neglect all of them. Then what I'm going to get is only the DC solution. I'm back to square one. I want to start looking into transient operation, small signal. I'm going to keep those terms, but these second order terms, now the multiplication of two really small things is going to be even smaller, so I'm going to get rid of them. Multiplication of two numbers is much less than one. Yeah. Anytime you see the multiplication of two, these things are small, then multiplying by a big thing is, who knows, but two small things multiplying each other, get rid of it. One way to understand it the other way is this is a second order term. These hats for the AC parts. They're like, you know, partial derivatives. We'll see it in the Taylor series expansion. But these are all the non-linearity, okay? So I'm going to get rid of that because I can neglect second order terms. So I do that. I'm going to rewrite this whole thing. And what I have now are some terms that only contain DC values, L, D, I, L, D, T with the capital I, L, capital V, G, capital V, D, V. Those things are going to need to be equal. The DC stuff is going to equal the DC stuff, and the AC stuff is going to equal the AC stuff. So I'm going to split this into two equations, all the DC terms, all the AC terms. Okay. I'm going to have DC and AC terms up top. I'll get this first one, L, capital I, L, DT is equal to VG minus V plus DV. And I can group these two things together. This would be 1 plus 1 minus D, and the whole thing's negative. That's going to look like a minus D prime V. Look familiar? Same DC solution we've had. If I say this is equal to zero, that's my volt second balance equation. Okay. Now I bring the AC terms together, L D I L hat D T equal to V G hat minus V hat plus D V hat plus D hat V. And again, these two things have got a D minus one, which is the negative of a one minus D. So it's going to look like a minus D prime V hat. Bring this over. Okay. This is now my AC component. And this is what we'll be using shortly to model the AC behaviors of the circuit. Okay. We're going to be able to do the same type of thing for cap charge balance type equations. And we'll use those to develop an equivalent circuit model that we can analyze and solve transfer functions in AC. Before we do that, I just want to show another approach to get us to this same point, deriving this AC equation. So this perturb and linearize is one way you can do it. Here's the AC answer. The other approach is to just do a first order Taylor series expansion. Recall Taylor series. Looks like for some function of multiple variables, x1, x2, whatever. My Taylor series says I can approximate this as the bias point f of capital X1, capital X2, whatever that leads to at the output, plus my small signal parts times the partial derivative of the function with respect to them evaluated at DC. Plus any other variables, and then if I did the Taylor series, then I'd keep going and add my second order and higher derivatives. Okay. For the purposes of linearization, I'm neglecting those second order and higher terms. So I'm not going to worry about that part of the Taylor series. I'm going to only expand through that first derivative. There's my general approach. If I apply this, my equation that I was linearizing was this one. Okay. this got three variables, VG, V, and V. So if I want to have my first order approximation, I'd evaluate the DC. I'm going to skip that step because I really only want the AC part of this. The AC part is going to look like L hat DT. I want to solve for just the AC part. Then I'm going to go through and solve each of these derivatives, multiply by the small signal term. So the first one, the VG. So I'm going to have VG hat multiplied by the partial derivative of this thing with respect to VG. Partial derivative of that with respect to VG. This term is going to go away. It has no dependence on VG. This term is going to go to 1. My partial derivative is 1. Next term, do V hat. The partial derivative of this thing with respect to V. This term is going to fall out. This term, I'm going to get minus V prime of T. I take that partial and I evaluate it at DC, which is going to make it minus D prime. That's what I mean here is that once you take these partials, you evaluate them at the operating point. Okay. And then my last one, D hat, the partial of this expression with respect to D. Partial of this stuff with respect to D. What's the partial derivative of this expression with respect to D? Are these ones clear? How did I get these two terms? Or no? This is partial of call this stuff, this expression here, f of vg dv. This is the partial of f with respect to VG, this thing, the partial of F with respect to V, and then I'll have D prime times partial derivative F with respect to D, D hat, not D prime, excuse me. I could say, respect to the average of all of these things. Close. That was one of the two possible guesses. So why I made you guys do it is this is V. You're taking the partial with respect to D. D prime is 1 minus D. So that negative gets canceled by the 1 minus D. And you're just going to get V. Okay. So then that expression, if I made no mistake, is this expression. Get a minus on the D prime part, this one, but this thing remains positive. So two different ways. Anytime you approach this, you can perturb and linearize. You can do first order Taylor series expansion. This one, if you're comfortable with it, tends to be faster because you just go and write it and you can inherently neglect all the DC terms and neglect all the second order terms. This one, you have to go through and work with all DC, first order, and second order, and then split them out and eliminate. but both will work equally well. You make no algebra mistakes and get you to now an equation which is linearized and averaged. And now I split off AC and DC. So I do this for all of my volt second balance, cap charge balance, potentially input current equations. I'm going to have a set of AC equations. I can sketch an AC equivalent circuit model, and I can use that to solve a transfer function because it's now averaged and linearized. So it is an LTI system. We'll do that next class.